Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I prepared the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam to project on this wall, but it came late, so I'll just read it. But many of you know it, so if you know it, you can chant along. If you don't know it, you can listen. Both are purified. So this is the first verse of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Janmad yasya yaton bhayat itaratash charkeshu apigya swarat. Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muyanti yat surayaha.
Tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muyanti yat surayaha.
Tejo vari vridam yata vidimayo yatra trisargo mrisha. Yata vidimayo yatra trisargo mrisha. Dhamna svena sadhana rasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi.
Dhamna svena sadhana rasta kuhakam satyam param dhimahi.
At the there's a ring back in this. Is there someone to fix that? Who knows how to fix that? The title or the title for this morning's class is Satyam Param Dhimahi. Satyam Param Dhimahi. This verse is so packed that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spoke on this one verse for 1 month and didn't repeat anything. Of course, that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Dhaka, to show that there's volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of meaning in Srimad Bhagavatam, starting with the first verse. So we don't have a month. Looking at the clock, we have maybe an hour. So I'll just take some highlights, starting with Satyam Param. Satyam means truth, and Param Satyam is the absolute truth. And Dhimahi has a special connotation. Dhimahi indicates Gayatri Mantra. For example, there are many words in Sanskrit for meditate. We have one. Sanskrit has many. And four of them, you know, three of them come from the Ashtanga Yoga system. Dhyana, Dharana, and Samadhi. Meditation and meditation and meditation. There are degrees of fixing the mind, absorbing the mind, trance of meditation. Manmana, think of me, it's meditation. Absorbing. So some people ask, do you process, do you have some means of meditation? Excuse me, but the whole process is fixing the mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that this word, dhimahi, has a very special connotation from Rig Mantra, the Brahma Gayatri, which has the same term, dhimahi. It's our acharyas say, just by including this word, Vyasadeva is indicating very subtly, very gently, but very clearly, this Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra. Dhimahi, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Some people take the Brahma Gayatri Mantra to be other things. They take it to be meditation upon the sun. They take it to be meditation on the impersonal Brahman. Jiva Goswami, in his very exceptional way of presenting things, refers to various verses in the Bhagavatam, particularly in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, and without going through the detail of how he shows, it's not meditation on the sun, because in Gayatri Mantra it speaks of the eternal, effulgent being. So it's not that's not the sun. The sun comes to being, goes out of being, is not the sun. Maybe it's Brahman. And he goes, rather than his... So the Bhagavatam is explaining that it's the personality of Godhead who is the object of meditation, of Gayatri Mantra, and is the object of meditation of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's Satyam Param Dhimahi. So many... That topic itself is a week. And in the first line, Janma Dhyasya Yataha, that is the first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra. And so Srimad Bhagavatam is Vyasadeva's commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Vyasadeva compiled Vedanta Sutra as the summation in sutra form, very, very compact, tight, little sutras that explains the whole of the Vedas. And in case you can't understand the whole of the Vedas or those sutras, there's the commentary. Srimad Bhagavatam, Janma Dhyasya Yataha. And take those two, Janma Adi, Janma means creation. Adi means like etc. Creation, maintenance, or beginning with creation, maintenance and destruction. The whole of the affairs of that which we're very familiar with, the material realm, the source of that, that from which everything comes, that's the absolute truth. Whatever it is, from which everything comes, that's the absolute truth, and any other truth is relative to that truth. It's the effect of that cause. That cause which has no other cause is the absolute truth. And then some people say, well, what's the cause of that? And the answer is, there isn't any cause of that. That's what the absolute truth is. That from which everything else comes. If God is the source of everything, who's the source of God? It's a rhetorical question. Absolute truth. There may be gods or controllers, as the devatas are controllers of the affairs of the universe. Where do the devatas come from, and where do the universe that they control come from, the power to do the controlling come from? Somewhere there's an absolute truth, and whatever that is, the Vedas are searching. Then comes this directly and indirectly. The language of the verse, Janma Dhyasya Yatonvayad Itaratasht. So, Anvayad, directly. Itaraschast, Itaratasht, indirectly. What does that mean? We should, the Bhagavatam is instructing us that we should try to fix our mind upon the personality of Godhead. And by searching for that, the personality of Godhead, both by directly within the mind, fixing our mind upon the personality of Godhead, and indirectly, that is, through the manifestation of His various energies. Just like, this is it, by inference, we can hear the peacocks making their sound. We may not be able to see the peacock, but we can infer that sound indicates there's a peacock out there. In fact, the whole of Juniata County is filled with peacocks now. They breed very profusely, and it's like a phenomenon. We just brought two. Now they're all over the whole county. Like in Bhagavad Gita, after Krishna says directly, I am the source of everything. Everything comes from me. So Arjuna says, you're the personality of Godhead. Param Brahma, Param Dava, Pavitram, Paramam, Bhavan, Purusham. You're it. You are the personality of Godhead. That's directly. Then he requests Krishna, please describe ways in which I can always think of you. And then Krishna does the indirectly. His devotees, his opulences within this world. And the opulences within this world are but a reflection of his opulences in the spiritual world, which is directly. Then there's indirectly. So I'm the light of the sun and the moon, I'm the prowess of all powerful men, I'm the strength of the strong, etc. Whatever you find in this world that's super excellent, see Krishna there, directly, that's indirectly, and directly. Or like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, always think of me, and engage in your prescribed duties. Or the other way around. Always engage in your prescribed duties and always think of me. Because engaging in prescribed duties for Krishna, you can think of Krishna and think of Krishna. Not like separate. Both directly and indirectly. This is the first verse of the Bhagavatam, and I'm going to go to the Chaturshloki verses, the four essential verses of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. For those of you that want to know where they are, it's Canto 2, Chapter 9, verses 33 through 36. And I'm going to read the translation of 36. I'll read the verse of this. The purport is one of the longest purports, the second longest purport in the Bhagavatam. It's 15 pages long. Etavat eva jigyasyam tatva jigyasu natmanaha anvayad vyatikat Yatirekabhyam Yat Syat Sarvatra Sarvada. Translation. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly must search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. That the words in the first verse are anvayat, directly, and itarata, indirectly. Different language in the Chaturshloki verse, but same message. Anvayat means directly. Vyatirekabhyam means indirectly. We're experiencing life, every one of us. And while experiencing life, try to see God within everything, or the hand of God behind everything, or the arrangements of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within all of the experiences as we walk down the path of life and experience life, the hand of God is behind. Now how can you see the unseen hand? By indirectly. Through knowledge of the scripture, Shastra Chakshusha, or Jnana Chakshusha, you can see through the eyes of knowledge. You can see. Although it may be indirectly. And with eagerness, one should be eager to see Krishna. Or be eager to have Krishna want to see you is even better. Act in such a way, this is Prabhupada's teaching, Bhakti Siddhanta's teaching, one should act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. And to have some eagerness for that. And that eagerness to please Krishna so that he will be happy and want to see us. That comes from the hearing and chanting process. The natural process for awakening our devotion. So both, directly and indirectly. Something that I want to share with you from the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, is in the process of creation, because janmadyasya yataha, the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the whole cosmic situation, is an important topic in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like where does everything come from, what maintains everything, and where does it go to? Novel question to ask. And the Bhagavatam supplies the answer. Something that when Sataputta Prabhu prepared his Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, one sentence that launched this whole project is very powerful. The way we view the universe has a significant impact upon how we view ourselves. Because we're within the universe. Like, look any direction, and what do you see? Matter. Above you, below you, left, right, sideways, behind you, in front of you. It's the sea of matter. So if we don't ask, like, you know, what's going on? What is this? What's my purpose while I'm here? What am I supposed to do? What's the program? If we don't ask that question, we're in ignorance. And that has an impact on how you experience yourself, by how you experience the universe in which you live. So it's maybe a little tedious. Maybe we like, you know, the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan a whole lot. And we don't like, you know, all this head-breaking stuff of what's going on around us. We just like want out, that's all we know. And that better place, we want that better place. But it helps us to view our relationship with Krishna now, because this is the circumstance where we are now. And how is Krishna's hand in all of this? The Bhagavatam supplies a beautiful answer. It's profound, it's deep, it's wonderful. It's Krishna conscious. It's one of, in the third canto, there's discussion between Vidura, who's Yamaraj, one of our 12 Bahajans, and Maitreya, was a personal friend of Vyasadeva and heard Krishna speak Uddhava Gita just before Krishna left. He's up there. And Vidura is up there, and these two are having a conversation on this topic. And it's up there. It's very deep, profound. And it's to open our eyes to see the unseen hand of Krishna. If you read it or hear it very carefully, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Krishna appears. So just do a little bit of this. Is Satyam Param Dhimahi in the indirectly, itarata. Because the directly comes in the 10th canto, but we have to qualify ourselves. That's why the other cantos are presented. So, quiz question. Everybody that's done a little Bhagavad Gita study knows from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, there are five subject matters in Bhagavad Gita, according to Baladeva Vidyabhusan. And one of them we hear less about, that's time. We hear about Ishvara, the Supreme Lord. We hear about Jiva, moving entity. We hear about karma. We hear a lot about karma. We hear a lot about prakriti, material nature, the modes of nature. There are more verses in the Bhagavad Gita on the modes of nature than any other topic. It's like very, very well presented, thoroughly presented. And the fifth one we don't hear so much about, time. We hear kalosmi. Krishna says, time I am, the destroyer of all things. It's one of the five. Because without time, things don't happen. Unless you're in the spiritual world. And then there's time, but there's eternal time. There's not time as we know it. Or the phrase is, in the spiritual world, time is conspicuous by its absence. Such a nice phrase. Time, as we know it, that's past, present, future. Because without past, present, future, you don't have events. Like, here we are in Gita Nagari, and we were somewhere else before, and we're going to be somewhere else later. But right, so there's an event. We're in Gita Nagari. Without time, you don't have events. You don't have creation. You don't have maintenance. You don't have dissolution. You don't have stuff. You don't even have stuff. You don't even have the elements without time. So in the process of describing sarga, what Lord Vishnu does to bring creation into being, and this sarga, what Brahma does to like put everything together, chief engineer takes all the elements in the plan and creative impetus and realization, and he puts it together. How? It's just astounding. The description in the Bhagavatam, what to speak of, what Brahma's experiences of creating. It's really deep. It describes that all the planets, all the forms of life, like Prabhupada describes, you know, dinosaurs becoming extinct or any other species becoming extinct. You know, he laughs at it. Because from the knowledge of the Bhagavatam, something may be absent for some period of time. But where did it come into being? Dinosaurs. And Prabhupada says, dinosaurs, finosaurs. People would ask Prabhupada, what about dinosaurs? Dinosaurs, finosaurs. Don't become so concerned. So, but there's, it's described that Brahma, after his being empowered by the personality of Godhead to do creation, he takes the subtle, primordial seed and places the subtle, primordial seed of planets and beings all over the universe. He's got this like subtle blueprint and has the subtle essences of things. The elements are not yet gathering around those subtle essences of things. But he places them. And he does this over a period of time. And then Vidura asks, could you tell in detail everything about time? Don't leave anything out, please. Because time is necessary for creation. Time is necessary for events. Time is necessary for the unfolding of the elements. So I just want to read a little paragraph on this. This is the unseen hand of the Lord. Maitreya said, eternal time is the primeval source of the interaction of the three modes of material nature. Same reverse. The modes of material nature don't do anything. They're dormant. They're inert. They're inactive. They're just hanging out, doing nothing, dormant. Minus the intervention of time. And when time starts interacting with the modes of nature, they become activated. It is unchangeable and limitless, and it works as the instrument of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his pastimes of material creation. So instrument, it's like, you know, in the kitchen they have spoons or pots. They don't like put their hand on the flame to cook food. They put it in the pot and stir with the spoon. There's instruments. But the cook is using those instruments to do the cooking. So Krishna is using the instrument of time to do creation. But he's not directly contacting. It's time. It's his, the unseen hand. Purport. Fasten your seatbelt. The impersonal time factor is the background of the material manifestation as the instrument of the Supreme Lord. It is the ingredient of assistance offered to material nature. No one knows where time began, where it ends, and it is time only which can keep a record of creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material manifestation. This time factor is the material cause of creation, and it is therefore a self-expansion of the personality of Godhead. So, time I am, Krishna expands. It's specifically, it's Kala Shakti. There's personal manifestations, personal expansions, like super soul is a personal expansion. And then there's energetic expansions. This is that kind. But it's directly being moved by him. And I'm not going to read the whole purport, but it's brilliant. It's like, you know, puts Einstein to shame. It's describing that the background is eternal time, and eternal time moves according to the relative position of the living entity, their desire, their association with the modes of nature, their karma. And so it's eternal time manifested differently according to the planet, according to the being, according to the circumstance. So we know relative time, but what's behind relative time is eternal time. So it's this influence of time that makes events happen. It makes the demigod realm happen. It makes our realm happen. It makes the hellish planets realm happen. It's Brahmaloka happen. Brahma's life, the end of Brahma's life. It's unseen. And because of the influence of time that's taking a record of all events, Krishna doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't even have to hold the instrument. But events don't happen without that influence of time. So we have this conventional phrase, by the arrangement of providence, kind of like fate. That's time. Time moves stuff. And so we see the stuff. And we see, you know, this person did that, another person didn't do that, and so we have, you know, circumstances of life. We blame people. But it's time, and it's interacting. Time is interacting with us because of our Krishna consciousness or lack of Krishna consciousness. And if it's Krishna consciousness, if it's direct, the time energy doesn't act in the same way as the internal potency. It's a whole other realm. And one who is taking the message of Srimad Bhagavatam seriously, searching both directly and indirectly for the personality of Godhead, again in the language of the Bhagavatam, up to this, we'll go back in the chapter of Sloki verse, yat syat sarvatra sarvada, sarvatra in all circumstances, sarvada at all times, both directly and indirectly, searching for the Absolute, searching for our restoring our relationship with Krishna once again. Yet, syat, up to this. What's the up to this? That's pronoun referring to the previous verse, and essentially it's pure devotional service. Up to pure devotional service. Here's text 35. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I'm outside of everything. What's going on? This is a chapter of Sloki verse. This is like, you know, got your head scratching. What's going on? What's he saying? It's the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy. By his energy, Krishna expands. But Krishna is the source of that energy, so the elements enter, but the source of them rests with him. And similarly, he expands himself both energetically and by his Paramatma feature and by his impersonal feature. His impersonal feature as Brahman, his impersonal feature as time, Krishna is spread everywhere. At the same time, he has his own abode. Just like the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says the same thing in different words. So how are we to understand these things? Like, you know, the head-scratching thing. It's not by speculation. It's not by speculation. It's by patiently hearing and receiving the transcendental message with a eager to understand heart that's become purified by regular hearing and regular chanting of Krishna's holy name and regular service unto the person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. Then these understandings become revealed. One last thing, two last things. The Tene Brahma Hrida Ya Adikavaye says, this knowledge was imparted within the Hrida, within the heart of Lord Brahma. That same subject matter that Muyanti Yatsurayaha, that bewilders the demigods, Surayaha, Tejo, Varimridam Yata Vinamayo, this process of creation that involves material elements, Tejo, Varimridam, fire, water, and earth. Here's how Srila Prabhupada translates it. By him only, personality of Godhead, Satyam Param Dhimahi, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representation of water seen in fire. Like, that's a contradiction, because fire evaporates water. But if you look at water, you look at fire, it may appear that there's, in the flame, there's water. Or, see land seen on water. Like, see a desert island, or excuse me, an island in the middle of the ocean. It may look like that. Sometimes it may look like that. But it's in the middle of the ocean, there's no land. And in the fire, there's no water. Or in the desert, similarly, there's no water. But it's an illusion that's created. I want to make one other reference about this. In his Bhagavat Arka Marichimala, which is Bhagavatam according to subject matter, inspired, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes at the end, very last part of the book. Basically, he expresses like an apology. He says, I shouldn't really say this. But then he goes ahead and says it. I might become proud or taken as proud, but I want to give credit where credit is due. He says that Surup Dhamadar, the personal servant, or secretary of Lord Chaitanya, appeared to him and instructed him to write this book. He gave him the information of how he should break up the chapters of the book according to the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he gave him a very special benediction. The special benediction was, he gave him a very special elucidation or explanation of this first verse, which is right within the first chapter of this book. What platform of Krishna consciousness was Bhaktivinoda Thakura? A direct audience with personal secretary Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said, I want you to write a book. Here's what you should write. Here's how you should write it. And here's a special explanation of the first verse. So this, in relation to this Tejo Vari Mridam, here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes. There are three types of manifestations. Manifestations of the spiritual world, manifestations of a living entity, and manifestation of the material world. Spiritual manifestation can be somewhat compared to fire. Fire is normally unseen. It appears when there's friction. All spiritual substance is eternally existing. It manifests by the will of the Lord. Similarly, in this third canto, the same expression is used as what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is writing here. The living entity, or Krishna's presence within everything, is compared to fire. Same. Spiritual manifestation is everywhere. Even, not just because we're in the Dham, Dhitanagari, but Krishna is everywhere. Super soul is everywhere. Krishna's energies are everywhere. Krishna is everywhere. You just can't see. Similarly, fire. It's stored. The example is given in the Bhagavatam. There are differences of form. But like, you know, look around the room and there's some number of human beings. There's probably some number of other living entities in this room. And the forms are different. Species may be different, forms may be different. Just like the example is given, just like wood may be of different types, or fuel may be of different types, and the flame may be of different quality, different color, but fire is heat and light. That's the intrinsic quality of fire, heat and light. Different intensities, different varieties. I know this from my chemistry days, that, you know, different elements, you can find out which element it is because you put it in fire and it burns blue, it burns red, it burns orange. But fire is fire. So that essence may remain unseen. Krishna's presence may remain unseen, but Krishna's presence is everywhere. And as fire is brought out by friction, similarly by Krishna's arrangement, when he invites us to serve him and we serve him, Krishna may manifest himself to our conscious perception directly or indirectly. And one should be eager. That's the friction. You know, it's not the material purpose of deluding, it's the higher purpose of illuminating or awakening our dormant Krishna consciousness if we apply ourselves properly to life according to Vedic direction. Krishna becomes disclosed. The fire, the spiritual reality, becomes manifest, although generally hidden. Next. The manifestation of the living entities can be compared to water. When water is cold, it becomes hard as stone. And when it is warm, it is liquid. The living entities, who are like sparks of the spiritual sun, Krishna, become conditioned by Maya because of their aversion to the Supreme Lord. When these living entities become inclined to the Supreme Lord, they become like liquid and engage in the loving service of the Lord. So he's describing different conditions of within the material arrangement that on one case bewilders and the other case illuminates. We take the teaching of Lord Brahma, receive the Vedas in specific succession from Lord Brahma, we can see Krishna. And if not, we become bewildered. Same living entity. The third, the manifestation of the material world can be compared to clay, earth. Clay may be transformed into pitchers or pots. These three manifestations are possible by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Lord. Although they sometimes appear perishable, they are factual. He doesn't elaborate. That was like, you know, this is just the introductory verse of the Bhagavatam, from which volumes and volumes expand. And it's such a beautiful literature that if you become familiar with these messages of the first canto and then go on to the further cantos of the Bhagavatam, because you've heard carefully, then you read something over here and you go, oh, that's what it was meaning. Like Anantasheshwar was saying, I've read the first canto and I don't fully understand it. And I read it again, I don't fully... Keep reading it. And in course of time, when that eagerness to connect with Krishna is inspired by the process of hearing, oh, there's Krishna. The unseen hand of Krishna There it is. And then as you continue to progress in Krishna consciousness, you can see that all the time. It becomes part of how you see the world. It's fantastic. It's sublime. It works. It's real. It's the process that we've been invited into. If we simply, sincerely take it up and continue to apply that process in our life. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely independent. Dhamna Svena Sada Narasta Kuhakam Satyam Param Dhimahi. The Narasta Kuhakam illusion is absent in this reality, and Krishna and those who are taking shelter of Krishna, Krishna who is self-sufficient, he isn't depending upon anyone or anything else. And one who depends fully on Krishna doesn't need to depend on anything or anyone else. This one literature is sufficient to carry one out of darkness of ignorance and into the light of the spiritual realm just by hearing and carefully applying that which we've heard, living the Srimad Bhagavatam, receiving Shrinvanti, Gayanti, Grinanti Sadhavaha. Make it, bring it inside your heart and live it. Experience life through the light of the Bhagavat, the light of Srimad Bhagavatam, transcendental life, just from the process of hearing. It changes. The world around us also changes, but certainly our experience of the world changes by this wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's 1 hour, 29 more days to go. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, first verse. Hare Krishna. Not money made in them?
I was wondering if you could reconcile what appears to me to be an inherent contradiction. On the one hand, as you're speaking about wanting to perceive Krishna's presence, that's the reply that we're coming from Krishna consciousness.
Keep going.
What Krishna says about the view that is speaking of meditation is, among other reasons, one can, through it, one can achieve direct perception of the self through realization.
Keep it simple.
Okay. So then the other side is, devotees are generally not revealed to others, at least in detail, how Krishna may have revealed himself to them, because such experiences are unverifiable by others, and perhaps because one's motive often might be to get praise from others reveal such experiences. So,
where are we going? Whiplash.
But on the one hand, through Krishna consciousness, we're trying to perceive Krishna openly. We want to serve Krishna, but we gain perception of Krishna, direct experience of Krishna. And then on the other hand,
Got it. Two things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has already addressed your question by saying normally these things are not discussed publicly. He's not disclosed for the reasons that you mentioned the second one. On the other hand, he's like feeling so grateful to Srupa Damodara. He wants to honor him. A detail, very important detail, is before he goes forward where normally one wouldn't, he offers his respects to his spiritual master, saying it's by his mercy this has happened. That's to check his tendency for pride. Because it's true, it's not just like, you know, cosmetic, it's true. If one receives mercy, one receives mercy through descending mercy. And we can even access previous acharyas through descending mercy. It's true. Now, it's not verifiable, and for other reasons, it's normally not done. Now, the second is such things as what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing, or any direct experience of Krishna, something or other, what some devotees sometimes call mystical experiences. Those may not be the ones that we want to share, but it's recommended, encouraged. It's like something that devotees are to do, even Madhyama Adhikaris are to do, is to share realizations with those who are peers. Discuss Krishna Katha with like-minded souls. Whatever, you know, that level is, to discuss Krishna Katha with like-minded souls. Intimate, confidential things, when, like Lord Chaitanya set by his example, he only discussed those with a select few persons, and those persons were very, very qualified. But hearing and sharing something that I read, something I appreciated, something that inspired me, some realization about Krishna, this is our Krishna conscious life. That's the first example of the two that you presented. So we may be, that it's, you know, a fair amount of discretion, a little touch of common sense, and the instructions of our acharyas can guide you in that area. Yes. Up front here.
Maharaj, this is I don't think the right word is contradiction that sometimes is discussed. It's on.
Okay.
It says it's good. On the one hand, trying to understand that it's a time factor that's actually moving everything in this world.
Yes.
It's a time factor that's bringing the good, the bad, the success, the failure, and so on.
Yeah.
It's not really the personality, it's the time.
That's right.
And on the other hand, understanding responsibility. What is my duty in a particular situation?
Oh, that's not that. Knowing the absolute truth doesn't discount my social duties. It, with, you know, spelling it out, you know, details and details and details. I have my duties in so many different ways. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. You know, unpack that, and there's life. There's the realization of the absolute truth of Krishna's hand in things, and the time factor, and Krishna's making things happen. Now I have my duties. Let's say, you know, you know somebody, or I know somebody that's undergoing a struggle. On the one hand, but then on the other hand, that this is an arrangement of Krishna to help someone come to learn some lesson of life or come closer to him. So we could say, don't worry about it, it's just Krishna's, you know, helping you become closer to him. Chant and be happy. Here's some prasadam. I love you. Some persons, that's maybe all they need. Some persons, that's not all that they need. I mean, so we may administer to the, you know, taking the holistic picture of somebody's physical, psychological, emotional, you know, what their needs are, and address those. while at the same time we're performing our prescribed duty, but we're keeping in mind, ultimately, this is Krishna's hand through the agency of Super Soul, who has got so many, you know, agents helping him do different things. Krishna's in the background. And Krishna's beckoning. And our role is to help ourselves and others who we're interacting with go to Krishna. We have our roles and our duties. They're not, one doesn't cancel the other.
Just a fine tuning.
Okay.
Understanding one's duty in a particular situation would also require a lot of, let's say, guidance. I was thinking of the example of Chittaketu, where he has 10 million wives and he's trying with each wife to have a child. Time factor is telling him this is not going to happen. But he's thinking, my responsibility is to have a son in the kingdom. So he's determined.
He's thinking of more than that.
Yeah. It's my same question, just a fine tuning. I guess then, if you were to hear Angira Muni, Narada Muni, then stop.
Yeah, Krishna, but, and even, so, because he was an elevated person, Krishna sent elevated persons. And Angira evaluated, he can't hear the transcendental knowledge yet. So I help prepare him to hear transcendental knowledge. He's expert. And he brought, when he came back again, his Narada, who's more expert. They took him across the finish line. So, time, place, circumstance. The microphone's dead. Yes?
One of the observations I had after reading Canto 1 and 2 and 3, this observation, I haven't read Canto 4, so maybe my observation is not true for Canto 4 as well. But, and then my observation is only about the Sanskrit words and not Prabhupada's translation of workbook. What I observed was that Supreme Personality of Godhead is always at this, and I'm not talking about the words that talk about the reincarnation of the Lord and Lord Rama or Lord Krishna, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always at this by Supreme Personality as the narration as Bhagavan or Lord Krishna. I've been wondering why in all these specifics the Lord has never been at this.
I've not heard Prabhupada, I've not read anything where Prabhupada has answered that question, so I can't draw upon that. So by anything, you know, anything I'm going to say is like, take it or leave it. But the earlier cantos, well, first of all, there are places where Krishna is directly spoken about in, for example, in the seventh chapter of the first canto, or in several places in the first canto. So I'm not sure that your representation is like, you know, right on. That Vyasadeva never uses Krishna's name directly. But let's presume that that's the case. Meghavati, you want to add something? First Canto, Chapter 3. Okay. Well, besides one example, I'm sure there's other examples. But let's just, for sake of, carrying on. Maybe, in general, when referring to the personality of Godhead, it's one of the two, Hari or Bhagavan. Okay. What those earlier cantos are doing is helping one to approach the 10th canto, where in fullness Krishna is presented. So how, same in Bhagavad Gita, it's not Sri Krishna Uvacha, it's Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Why? Our acharyas comment on that one. There may be many Krishnas, pure persons who are known by the name Krishna. This is Bhagavan. There may be persons that have the name Bhagavan too. That's what our acharyas say about that. Why is not Sri Krishna Uvacha? It's to help us understand his position as the supreme person. As Parashara Muni says, he who has all opulences in fullness, the other Krishnas or other persons of the name Bhagavan who don't have all opulences in fullness. That's the meaning. And it's to help us come to the approach the lotus face of the Supreme Lord by approaching the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So we may address him in other ways in the beginning. So that we're clear what his position is. But Bhagavan refers to Krishna. Hari refers to Krishna. It's reminding me of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's objection to a verse written by Vyasadeva where Lord Brahma is referring to Krishna as Mukti Pade. And he's saying he made a mistake. You're not saying Vyasadeva made a mistake. Sarvabhauma did. He said it should be Bhakti Pade, not Mukti. Because when one hears the word Mukti, one thinks of this Sayuja Mukti. And for a devotee, that's abominable. But Bhakti Pade, he's the giver of Bhakti. Lord Chaitanya laughed and said, he also gives Mukti. And he's the only one that gives Mukti. So it's he didn't make a mistake. But Sarvabhauma, it's amazing. Formerly, that's all you thought about is merging. And now you can't even bear to hear the word. So we're a little like that. We only hear Krishna. Krishna. But Bhagavan and Hari indicate Krishna. Very common. Hari Katha and Krishna Katha. Similarly. It specifically means Krishna in the spiritual world. Hari. Keep it short because of time.
One question is, it's my understanding correct that Siddhanta Krishna means to accept whatever events are coming to my life, to accept that is Krishna sanction? Is that
something like that?
Next question.
When you accept, it doesn't mean you're passive. It means you're not grumbling and complaining and whining and moaning. You accept, and now Krishna wants some service appropriate for what the circumstance is. That's what accept means. It doesn't mean passive. Okay?
My understanding is that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the graduate study of Krishna consciousness. So
the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita.
Okay. So, I'm more inclined to study, I don't feel comfortable going to see the Bhagavad.
Okay, no problem. You like Bhagavad Gita?
But
Better than Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Stick with Bhagavad Gita. That's it? Nanda, last. Nanda, raise your hand.
Then you said, did you think that Krishna, instead of we wanted to see Krishna, that Krishna wants to see us? So then, how do we see this spiritual conception of humility? Because it appears to me that it's like...
No. Krishna likes when you're humble. So be humble. Be so humble that Krishna will want to come see you. It's a spiritual conception. The other kind of humility isn't going to work. The spiritual conception. Krishna likes. It's not a contradiction. It's not that it doesn't inflate pride and ego. Genuinely humble. Like Prabhupada would quote, doesn't it say this in the Bible? The meek shall inherit the kingdom of God. That, like that. Mukti Pades with Dayabak. Same idea. Unflinchingly, let me stay fixed at the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead. Under any circumstance, let me not flinch. Let me not budge one fraction of an inch from that position. Knowing that by so doing, I will inherit the property of my father. What's the property of my father? The spiritual world. Well, one will go back to Godhead. Like that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.